Welcome to After the Buzzer, the post-Thanksgiving edition. We're at the World Headquarters. Gordy Jones, my man, how are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm good. Mike Gross, and we're going to go guestless because we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Most of it's centered around college football.
Yes.
A sport that I love and that kind of makes me want to take a shower.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right.
I hate the fact that that's true, but it honestly is. I remember the Hunter Thompson piece, the Kentucky Derby is decadent and depraved.
Yes, of
college
course.
Football feels depraved to
yes.
me.
Yes, it does.
And we're going to talk about a lot of the elements of these coaching situations that are so much in the news lately, including everything that's going on at Penn State. But Gordy, where to begin?
Well, we have a lot of places we can go. I mean, Brent Pry, Penn State's defensive coordinator, and a guy who has been kind of James Franklin's lieutenant dating back to 2011 when he was at Vanderbilt. And he's been with him the entire time at Penn State. So the last 6 years as defensive coordinator, he's going to Virginia Tech. Brian Kelly is going from Notre Dame to LSU on a nice 10-year, $95 million contract.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley is going from Oklahoma to USC, and they're giving him $110 million and all kinds of other perks. There was a report that they were going to buy his houses plural, in Oklahoma. That's since been put into question, but they are going to get him a house, and they're going to let him use the plane whenever he feels like it. Private jet.
Like James Franklin only has 55 hours worth.
He can use it whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So, and then not quite on the same magnitude, but nonetheless notable, is Rod Carey was fired as the coach at Temple after 3 years, and obviously a job that has been a tough one for everybody except Matt Rhule over recent history.
Yeah, so, right. That's a good point. Yeah.
So, there's a lot of ways we could start. Where do you want to go?
Well, let's start with just a small point about Brent Pry.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he's been mentioned for head coaching jobs before, but the only one that I know about was Georgia Southern,
mm-hmm.
maybe like 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and he had been on the staff at Georgia Southern. He was mm-hmm. connected there, I think, before Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has to be before Vanderbilt. But so this seems like, I'm not surprised that he got a head coaching job, mm-hmm. but Virginia Tech's a pretty big boy thing. That surprised me a little bit. Now, supposedly, Joe Moorhead, who is a former very impressive stint as the head offensive coordinator at Penn State, and now the OC at Oregon, he supposedly is about to be hired by Akron. I would have thought those two would be switched. I would have thought Moorhead for Virginia Tech would make more sense, and Pry, who has never been a head coach, for Akron. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I think Pry will be fine. He ought to be able to recruit. Mm. He's got enough personality, I think. He'll be fine, and you can hire an offensive guy. That's what he'll have to do. He'll have to hire an offensive guy to do that. But, but anyway, that piece of it described surprised me a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to get into with this is now Penn State has to hire a defensive coordinator.
Who gets the job?
Well, let me give you just throw this out there. There's a guy named Derek Mason, mm-hmm. who replaced Franklin at Vanderbilt as the head coach, had the results that one normally does at Vanderbilt, lost that job, is now the defensive coordinator at Auburn. He's a very highly regarded defensive guy who's connected to James Franklin. It's probably going to take big money to get him because he's in Auburn. He's in the SEC West, which is at lunacy land. Yeah, so it's hard to outspend or out lunatic. There's four or five programs in that. Anyway.
Yes.
So
that seems like a good name. But this is something Franklin has often mentioned, and I'm sure all head coaches are like this, that they have sort of a ready list of potential successors for guys on
the
staff.
I don't doubt that. Knowing him, he's got ring binders full of them. Yeah.
And for the most part, he's hired well. I mean, John Donovan is an obvious exception to that, but for the most part, he has hired good people. He's surrounded
himself. Yeah, I would agree. But my point about Mason is, hiring him would kind of send a message about this commitment, university-wide commitment to doing everything it takes to okay, do you mean that? Which supposedly was a condition of Franklin's new deal.
Sure.
Do you mean that? That would be an example. Mm-hmm. Bringing in a big-time coordinator that's going to make $2 million plus a year or whatever it is mm-hmm. would be a good illustration that you're serious about that.
That's true.
Yeah.
A couple things about Brent Pry. First of all, I was looking at his resume today, well, whatever you want to call it, but he was actually a graduate assistant at Virginia Tech back in 1995.
He has
tenuous ties to the university. The other thing, I think he's done a really great job, but it's interesting to me that this year, two of their more galling losses, the one to Illinois and the one to Michigan, the defense broke down. I mean, it broke down. They couldn't stop the run against Illinois, of all teams, which is ridiculous. And then they gave up a huge play at the end of the Michigan game. I mean, maybe that's just a good team making a big play in the clutch, but it was sort of interesting to me that, you know, while they did come up big in the red zone against Wisconsin and Auburn at the end of the game, they had those two very notable breakdowns.
Yeah, that's right. And those are the two. Other than that, I would say their defense was terrific.
Yeah, I mean,
unqualified terrific.
And it was proven out by when the all Big Ten teams were chosen this week, and everybody made it except one guy.
Yeah, defense. Got some mention. Got some. That's true. And here's an interesting thing about that. They had three guys on the defense that made all Big Ten, first team all Big Ten, all transfers.
Huh.
The punter. The kid from the defensive end from Temple,
right,
and the JUCO transfer, the safety. It's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't want to attach too much significance to it, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, Jaquan Brisker being the last of those, whose grandfather was John Brisker, the ABA bad boy. How's that for some trivia?
That's impressive, big guy. That's well done. That's well played. We ought to have footnotes attached in an audio version of this. Audio version of footnotes for this
podcast. There's some weird thing about John Brisker. He disappeared in Idi Amin's regime, and he's not been heard from since.
Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah,
it's kind of an amazing tale.
And Idi Amin has not been heard from for a long time. So, I mean, that dude is really buried. So,
at any rate, that's a digression that, you know, I just, for some reason, I just think of that when I think of every time I see Jaquan Brisker, and he did have an unqualified great year despite playing hurt. It looked like most of the year.
Yeah, I thought both of their safeties were really good.
And
they're both transferred in from the same junior college, by the way. But and the other one, Jair Brown, I think will be back next year.
Yeah, he was really good, too.
He was very good. I think he was as good as Brisker, but Brisker was a little more recognized coming into the season, and he's a veteran guy. You know, he's a senior and all that.
He was very good.
Very, very good player. I just want to – here's another footnote. When I was in college, we had an Idi Amin poster in our apartment, and I autographed it. Like, our place was called the Nut House. So the place I lived was called the Nut House, so I said, best wishes, Nut House, your friend always, Idi Amin. Just a little FYI.
We love footnotes. Anyway, we move on to these other coaching changes, and this is something I mentioned before we started, how Brian Kelly is moving from Notre Dame to LSU, despite the fact that they're 11-1 this year, which has caused consternation in Irish land. And every time I look at Brian Kelly, I think of one guy, and the guy's name was Declan Sullivan, who at age 20 died in 2010 when he was asked to go up in a tower or whatever it's called, some kind of a platform thing, to shoot video of Notre Dame's practice, and the tower ended up collapsing in 50-mile-an-hour winds.
Because of the weather. Yeah.
And to me, and I don't know, it doesn't seem, if you're a coach, aren't you almost compelled to resign or something? Some dramatic gesture at that point, because that just seems like that's beyond the pale.
It certainly seems like the kind of thing for which the term wrongful death was coined. It seems like it should have been more. And again, you get into the details and you get into courts and you get into lots of things can happen that end up to be sort of qualifiers for that. But that was an awful incident that people seem to have largely forgotten. Now, we've seen some since this thing broke with LSU. We've seen some mention of it, but Oh, Brian Kelly. I don't know. I get a little J.R. Ewing feel from him. I always have, and some of the young people won't know who J.R. Ewing is. But college football seems... I love it, and yet it seems depraved and dirty, and I can't escape that. Mm-hmm. These guys are in, and some of it is inevitable. These guys have to lie. Yeah. These guys are in so many situations where they have to lie.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Now, when Franklin, 3 years ago, when he was mentioned in relation to the USC job, mm-hmm. and they had not even fired Clay Helton. Mm-hmm. It was not even clear that they were going to fire Clay Helton, right. But there was talk.
Right.
And Franklin was asked in one of his pressers, are you going to be the coach of Penn State next year? And mm-hmm. he said, and to me, that's kind of an unfair question.
Right.
Because you're forcing him into a position where he has to lie.
Right.
He's not going to... The honest answer to the question in that moment was probably, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no way he's going to... You or I wouldn't say, I don't know.
Right.
You can't. Mother Teresa wouldn't say, I don't know, in that moment. On the other hand, last week, Franklin had said to us on... After the Rutgers game.
Yes.
He said to us, I get it. I understand why you're asking me this. I'll talk about this all you guys want on Tuesday. I thought some things were going to happen faster than they did.
That quote jumped out at me too. Yeah.
Yeah, which to me means he's going to get another contract. And they're wrangling over the details.
Which is ultimately what happened.
So on Tuesday, I had the first question.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, given the context of what he just said,
right.
I don't see how I cannot in the leadoff spot. So I asked him, are you going to be the head coach of Penn State next year in that circumstance? And of course he said, I'm sorry, guys, I got to push this back another day.
Oh,
because,
dear.
You know, and then on and then the next day, the contract broke. So
there you have it. It was just a timing
thing. Such a dirty.
Now here's another example of that. Lincoln Riley, who, as we mentioned, just got the job at USC after being at Oklahoma for the last 5 years. He was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. I think it was Sunday night. I don't remember exactly. But at any rate, he's on there.
Yeah.
And Van Pelt asked him about the machinations of getting the job. And he said, well, we weren't contacted till early Sunday morning. And then he asked him something else, and he said, well, maybe it was late Saturday night. And so the truth was very pliable.
Well, that was weird. I saw that exchange. And I guess he said, it's hard to believe that his final answer was, they contacted me Saturday night.
That was the first he heard of it.
I slept for a couple hours, and then I got on a Zoom with him, and we started talking and hammering out the details. Well, it's really hard to believe that that's true.
Yeah, there's no way.
I mean,
maybe it's true that he wasn't talking to him. Maybe his agent was for weeks on end.
Yeah, and that's so you're in a position.
Maybe
where,
maybe in letter of the law, maybe he was telling the truth. Probably not.
But hey, that's a game changer in college football. Him getting that job.
I would
to
think.
Me. I mean that is really that changes the Pac-12. Oklahoma going into the SEC now and hiring a coach at the same time. That's USC, I just think, is a sleeping giant.
It's got to be. And he's always been the hot name lately, like as an offensive innovator and a guy who's really gotten the most out of especially his quarterbacks.
Yeah,
you don't
really have to worry about an offensive coordinator or quarterbacks coach because he's that.
Yeah.
He is that.
Yeah.
And they can – well, you know, Oklahoma had a verbal – from a five-star quarterback who's a junior in high school right now, he decommitted and just committed to USC.
I can't blame him. Cannot blame him. Where would you rather play?
There's so many things about this sport that are
right.
I can't really blame him, but they feel dirty. You know,
well,
I'm not saying that feels dirty.
Right, but this is something that I've always thought, that if you are recruited by a guy, you know, as in the case of this young man, and you go to a place, and then the coach leaves, shouldn't you be allowed to be released from your, shouldn't that be like standard operating procedure? You're automatically released from your scholarship.
That should go without saying.
You know, but it's not. That's not the way it goes, you know. And to me, that should be the case. Every time a coach leaves, you should be allowed to leave and go somewhere else without sitting out a year and just play. You know?
Here's the thing that I always wonder about, and I brought this up one time talking with a bunch of the guys that cover Penn State, and I was kind of dismissed with it, like I was being unrealistic. But why can't the NCAA have a rule that no member school can hire a coach who's under contract to another member school? Why can't they have a rule that contract is sacrosanct?
That would never stand up legally, though, would it?
Well, why not?
I don't know.
I mean, it's a contract.
Yeah.
You know, it's a five-year...
But there's got to be an out in there for everybody, right? I mean, everybody has like a clause.
Everybody has a buyout or whatever, but why can't the NCAA, which sort of creates this economic model that so many people think is un-American or whatever, why can't they... I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a better way to handle that piece of it.
It seems like every college coach is always... it doesn't happen that often, does it, that they get to the end of a contract? There's always, you know, for recruiting purposes, they always want to have like a runway out there, don't they? It doesn't seem like they ever allow themselves to get to the end of a contract.
Yeah, oh yeah, they don't. Either look at Franklin.
Yeah.
And Franklin's had his contract redone or got a new contract. I think this is the fourth time since he's been at Penn State.
Perfect example.
And he's not making a ton more money than he was at the beginning of his tenure, but supposedly this contract is linked to a university-wide commitment to do what they have to do to compete for the national championship in facilities, in student-athlete housing. That's one of the things he said. Now, why does that commitment connected to his contract?
I don't know.
Why does it have to be?
There's a question. So and is the press box connected in any way?
Hold your breath. unless you believe in the Paterno movie. Would you remember the Paterno movie where the Beaver Stadium press box was that sports bar? Hey, let's go.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
I mean, anybody who covers that team had to get a laugh out of me in that. That was unbelievable. But you know what I mean? Like, for example, the student-athlete housing thing.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean? Are we building new apartments for athletes? What's the problem with the current apartments for athletes? If we're building new ones, how much is it going to cost? Where are they going to be located? When does the work start? What are we talking about? You know what I mean?
But you're right. Why is it attached to his contract? Why is that not just standard operating procedure?
Yeah. It's weird. And we can go on. Anybody can go online and look at his compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we look at this plan that they're talking about that they took that they hammered out over the last 9 weeks?
it's a weird one.
Yeah,
it is a weird one.
It is a weird one. Here's another thing. This is another detail of this.
Yes.
Brian Kelly had to make a deal with LSU, and he's gone to Louisiana in like 24 hours after the deal.
After an 11-minute conversation with
his team. Which wasn't really 11 minutes. Yeah. It was like 4 minutes. But anyway, probably that's because of this new signing date. December
15th, right.
Yeah, that's probably why that is.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't have that, if national signing day was February like it used to be, he probably could have coached Notre Dame through the rest of this season, the playoff or whatever.
For sure.
You know,
there's no doubt.
So maybe that's a negative fallout of that change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another thing that makes it seem so. And how will it affect Notre Dame in terms of their motivation to go out and play?
I don't know. It could boomerang the other way. It might make them more competitive.
It could,
hell with that guy. Here we are.
Yeah, and they have a chance to get in the playoffs.
They're 11-1 as we speak.
It's a little bit of an outside chance, I think. Boy, you can concoct a scenario where what what would that committee do? Like, if Alabama wins, what if Iowa beats Michigan?
Yeah.
Well, then that really makes it weird. What if Baylor, Iowa beats Michigan and Baylor beats Okie State? Then you really got a
Then you got a mess. There. Well, let's talk about that Michigan-Iowa game. Obviously, these are two teams that beat Penn State, albeit narrowly. And yeah. in the case of Iowa, after Penn State lost its quarterback, yeah. which had an amazing impact on that game. Like, you know, how do you handicap that? I mean, Michigan, I would think, is the better team, but they just kind of played their biggest game
yeah.
last weekend and played great yeah, against Ohio
did.
State.
They really did. There's no doubt in my mind that they're the better team in this mm-hmm. game, but you're right. This is a weird situation. Mm-hmm. Iowa is bad offensively. I really think if Sean Clifford had not gotten hurt, Penn State would have won that game easily.
Yeah.
Comfortably. Mm-hmm. I mean, Penn State, Iowa is not very good offensively. I think they've gotten a little better, mm-hmm. but they're not good. And I think their pass defense is better than their run defense. So football on the field, I think everything about the matchup favors Michigan. But it's a weird situation for Michigan to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another thing. All of a sudden, Harbaugh is a great guy.
Yeah, of course.
All of a sudden, everybody who's been killing Harbaugh for 5 years, all of a sudden, and part of it is, to his credit, he redid his contract last offseason and took a substantial pay cut
mm-hmm.
and was supposedly going to recoup that money in incentives.
Mm-hmm.
But now he announced the other day that he's donating any incentive money he makes, he's donating to the people in the Michigan Athletic Department who lost their jobs during COVID.
Well, that's a pretty nice gesture. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And it would be, you know, if they win the national championship, it would be like something like $3 million.
Hmm. That's a big number.
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
I mean.
And all of a sudden, it's got people have been dumping on for some.
I know. It's true. I mean, is he a bad guy or just a quirky guy?
I think more quirky.
Yeah, that's always been my impression.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad guy. Our buddy Dave loathes him. But
yes.
I'll tell you a guy that I got to credit for a little bit is Paul Feinbaum.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has been. He's been leading this parade by killing Harbaugh mm-hmm. for 5 years, and they had him on ESPN's morning show on Monday, and he said he did a real mea culpa. He did, hey, you know what? I've been dumping on this guy for years,
mm-hmm.
and he's taken a lot of heat, much of it from my stupid mouth, and well done.
Not enough of those guys do that.
Yeah.
It's like there's all this, you know, bluster.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank, whoever you want to talk about, Stephen A, whomever.
Yeah, I can think of so many examples.
And you don't hear that kind of thing
yeah.
very often.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I was wrong. You very seldom hear that.
Yeah.
Which is one of my pet peeves about the whole state of media.
Agreed. Yeah. You'll never get that from us. That's our vow to you, the viewer, the listener, the whatever you want out there. Yeah.
So far as Penn State's bowl destination, it seems like the consensus seems to be that they're going to go to the Las Vegas Bowl on December 30th and that either Arizona State or UCLA will be the opponent. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. I honestly, until this cycle, I didn't know that the Las Vegas Bowl had any Big Ten connection. I didn't realize that. It's one of those, it's similar to the Orange Bowl,
right,
where it has to be a Big Ten three times in 6 years or some weird thing like that, which is what the Orange Bowl has too. Nobody cares about these bowl games, honestly, and then it's nice. Nice for them to get to go. It's nice for them to get to go. I mean, that's
right.
it. You know,
right.
I think if they'd have beat Michigan State, maybe an Outback Bowl would have been in play.
Yeah.
Can't get a decent steak in this camp. One of our favorites.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very interesting time of year. I guess these bowl games, while they don't have any value in terms of the larger national championship picture, the coach is always touted as having value in terms of getting a couple extra weeks of practice, getting some guys who maybe haven't played a little more work, et cetera, et cetera, serving as a springboard into next season. That's sort of how you have to couch it if you're head coach.
My guess is you'd be hard-pressed to prove that it had a big impact in the following year in all wins and losses. That's my guess. I don't know that. But it makes sense. It's 15 more practices. That's a lot.
That's a big number.
That's really 3 weeks worth of practices.
That's as many as spring practice, right?
That's right. Yeah, and you can, you can use that any way you want to. And I know Franklin has talked about this at length in the past. He's used it developmentally. Like he'll have the non-travel players will scrimmage and they'll focus on them and player development for a week and that kind of stuff. Nobody cares about the Las Vegas Bowl, but, why not? Go play in the Las Vegas Bowl. I hope I get to go to Vegas, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
Or wherever they go. Nashville. I would like to go to Nashville.
That would be a nice place to be. That's the other, the Pinstripe Bowl and the Music City Bowl are the two other bowl games that are mentioned as possible destinations for Penn State. You've already been to the Pinstripe Bowl. And it was nice to be in Yankee Stadium, actually.
Nice to be in Yankee Stadium. Now, here's the thing about that game, though. If you remember, that game is on December 28th or 29th, and it was like May in terms of weather that day.
It was not and thank God for that, since it is an open-air press box.
Yeah, that's the thing. Open-air press box. It's a baseball press box. We're behind home plate, which means we're behind the end zone.
Yes.
So you end up watching much of the game on the Diamond Vision.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Which is weird, but it was a good game.
It was a very exciting,
dramatic game at the end.
There's two things I remember about that game. A, Anthony Zettel kind of teleporting from over center to the right sideline to make a play, because he was really good that year. And the other one was Chris Godwin just abusing some cornerback from obviously served as a springboard into his very successful college and NFL career.
He must have been a sophomore.
Either freshman or somewhere in there.
Maybe freshman. Yeah.
But at any rate, I forgot about that.
That's right. I definitely remember the Zettel play.
Oh, my God. That was as impressive a play as you'll ever see defensively.
I remember us looking at the replays, like, how the hell did he do that?
He just materialized. Because it was either a bubble screen or a wide zone something.
Yeah, it was like a screen pass. Yeah.
And he was here, and then he was over there.
Dragging down a running back.
Now, this is speaking of footnotes, I happened to read the other day, there was a 2013 profile of Nick Saban, and the writer quoted a friend of his as saying, the previous year Alabama had won the national championship, of course. Mm-hmm. And so a friend of his was on the phone with him congratulating him about winning the national championship. And Saban said, that damn game cost me a week of recruiting. I don't think he was too hurt by winning the national championship.
Again, these guys are out of their minds. They're not normal humans.
No. I mean, even if he just said that for effect, which I don't think he did.
Yeah. And this is the thing that when we talked about college football sort of seeming depraved a little bit.
Yeah.
These guys are... I think of, like, anybody who would want to go through the shit that you have to go through to be president of the United States is not something that you would, is not a person who you would want to be president of the United States. It's almost a little bit like that with these coaches. Like, what they commit to in terms of work and driven and what the family has to sacrifice.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just so...
It's a very, I don't even know if I can describe what that mindset must be like. I remember years ago talking to Andy Reid's wife, and she said that he went into the office on Monday morning and he came home on Friday night. He slept in his office every night. And I look at him and it's like, he's a heart attack waiting to happen,
It's amazing that he's, grounded out as long as he has. And I've got to suspect that he's found a few workarounds for that and figured out how to manage a little bit.
But that's always a point of pride, it seems, with every football coach. Oh, yeah, we're grinding away for 20 hours a day. That's just the way.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do what you need to do with the technology and with staffs being – you can't do what you need to do, like, in 10 hours. That's not enough.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I think – remember how at the end of – near the end of Joe's career, he mostly worked from home.
Right.
And he had this thing set up in the basement where he could watch film at home. And you, I mean, I don't know how much film he was watching, but and I don't know what he was processing from what he was watching at that point.
I still remember the picture of him. I think he was talking to a recruit over whatever it was. It wasn't Zoom then, but whatever it was. So he had him behind this. And it just looked like literally two worlds collided. the video screen could not have been more enormous, and there was this 80-year-old guy.
Anyway, you know, these guys are a breed apart.
Yeah,
I mean, they really are, and then they get put in so many situations where they almost have to lie, or they almost have to be dishonest, or they almost have to compromise.
Or, at least massage the truth at the very least, you know?
And, or compromise just in areas of your life. I mentioned the family thing.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, that's Andy Reid also an example there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sadly and tragically, actually.
That's right.
With his sons and how things have just... to say they've gone sideways doesn't even do it justice. I mean, it's just gone tragically wrong for him. And I've never thought of him as a bad human. He actually, the interactions I've had, I always thought he's a really decent person.
I agree with that.
I don't know if his commitment to coaching has contributed to that, or if it's, you know, other factors. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe it would have happened anyway.
It's unfair to assume it, but look at the reality. If it was somebody you know, around here, and you observed it, you couldn't help but think it.
You can't help but make that link. Now, because I wrote about this when his sons were going through trouble when he was still with the Eagles. My late brother-in-law, he was in the military for 29 years, so he was away from home all the time.
Right.
And both his kids turned out great. One of them actually turned out to be in the Air Force and worked on Air Force One for several years. His daughter has been a successful executive for IKEA. So why in one case was the time commitment that way and things turned out so well, and why not?
Now we're really getting into a behavioral science realm.
Right. In the course of reporting out that piece, I called Pat Williams. Pat Williams and his wife, his first wife, they had, I think, 5 biological children, and they adopted 14 kids from I forget how many different countries. And I talked to him about that, and he said, well, we tried like hell with this one kid, and it just never took.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, as we both know, parenting is a very inexact science, the most inexact science you can think of.
Yeah.
So I don't know all the factors that are involved, but you know, it's...
And I think the latest sort of science on this is that it's more hardwired and less about parenting than we would like to think, but social science is not math, it's not physics, it's a little different, it's not
an A plus B equals C proposition.
There's a lot of
side equations that enter into it, but I think your larger point about coaching in general and just what you see and how they have to operate is just, I don't know. I can't believe that it's healthy or even sane to some degree. Maybe that's the wrong word, but something like that.
And they all push each other.
Right.
You know, everybody, all these 130 teams that are playing major college football, they're all pushing each other to this in so many areas, in recruiting, in staff.
Right.
I read a really interesting thing last week about Georgia's program.
Okay.
Because Georgia, that's a guy that, by all impressions, when he took that job, it was either said or it went without saying, we're doing what you have to do to win. Anything that you need to win the national championship, we're going to do. So he has this gargantuan staff. He has all these analysts and advisors and a huge recruiting staff, to the point where they completely ignore, like, the star rankings of recruits.
Wow.
They don't pay any attention at all to what anybody else is doing, because they have so many people evaluating these kids that they don't have to pay. And this kid that they have that's this 6'8", 340-pound defensive lineman who runs a 4.8 40, I mean, he's just a freak show. He was not a highly recruited kid. He's out of Charlotte. He was like a 3-star, And these guys on this, these recruiting analysts just insisted to the coaching staff, you want this dude. You want this kid. And now he's going to be a Heisman finalist.
Isn't that interesting? Because, you know, the star thing we've talked about before, and you made the great point that, yes, you have to have X number of five stars if you want to be competitive at the highest level. That's just how it has to be. But, I mean, what more imprecise time could there be in your life when you're 17 or 18 and you might have a growth spurt, or you might get the right coaching or the right nutrition or the right whatever?
Think about your own life.
Yeah.
Think about the lives of people you know.
Right, exactly. There's so many variables at that stage in your life, and even more variables when you take into account, you know, major college recruiting and all the things that feed into that, and just player development and whatever. You know, if you get with the right staff.
It is amazing how good those star ratings are. I mean,
right.
The recruiting media industry is actually pretty good at what they do.
Right.
But I just thought it was interesting. But obviously it's inexact. And I just thought
very inexact. It's just
they are at the point, and maybe that's where Franklin wants to be.
Yeah, it sounds very analogous.
He's got this battalion of people that's working in that building that are grinding away on it every single day. And
I mean, I'm endlessly amused at coaching on all levels, just the army of coaches you have sitting, like, on, let's say, an NBA bench, and you have literally, like, seven guys sitting there. And you look at video from the 83 Sixers, and it's Billy Cunningham, Matty Kuchus, Jack McMahon, and Al Domenico, and that's it.
if I'm going to be like a snarky fan, I'm going to say, oh, all you have 17 coaches? You couldn't run a better play than that with 4 seconds left?
Thank you.
How many? And the same thing that people say about Franklin.
Right.
You know, you can't figure out how to manage a damn clock, and you have 12 assistants, and, you know, you hired an analytics firm. I don't know. In some ways, I'm sort of fascinated by and like the fact that sports is, you go so far down the rabbit hole with sports, and how deep it's gone. This goofy game with an oblong ball, and we have the combine, and we have the draft, and we have the recruiting industry. All of this stuff that has come from this goofy land acquisition game with a...
it's a very American thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And in some ways, I kind of like it. It's kind of fascinating to me. But in other ways, it's like, what are we doing? What are we doing
is true. And now, it's endlessly fascinating to me, too, how often, despite all that analysis and everything else, how often, you know, critical games come down to, like, the eighth guy on an NBA roster or the 40th guy on an NFL roster or, you know, fill in the blank. Despite everything, you know, the stars cancel each other out, and here comes, you know, somebody you didn't even, it's just a complete afterthought to John Q. Public.
That's right. I remember when we were down with our pal Del Jackson, when I was down at Duke watching the game, we sat with some NBA scouts, and we were talking, Del and I were talking, and it was like, you really need to pay somebody to come here and say that you know, this guy's an NBA player.
That's right.
I mean, I know enough about basketball to know this guy. You know what I mean? There's so much.
That is a real oddity. You know, it almost strikes me as kind of a boondoggle on the part of the scouts.
Yeah. and the other thing is, I think what happens is there are teams in Europe, there are teams in overseas teams that pay these teams, NBA teams, for information about those players.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of why that happens.
That's probably true.
But do you really need to be at Duke's game tonight and then North Carolina's game tomorrow night to figure out that, you know, some of these...
I want one of those jobs.
Me too.
Strikes me as a pretty damn good job.
Everybody says that's what a grind that is. That sounds pretty good to me.
the guys who really have the grind, and these are the guys that we used to sit behind and press roll at Sixers games, are the guys, the advanced scouts. Because they have to draw up all the plays. And to do that from where they're sitting, first of all, strikes me as incredible. I mean, you really got to know the game and really have to see the totality of what's in front of you to understand you know, and scout this whole thing out, because I think that that strikes me as a more difficult job than the talent scout.
No question. But again, my first thought when I think about that is, well, you know, that's great, but if you have LeBron, you have LeBron.
You don't need to write anything
down. You ain't drawing no shit that's going to help. But, you know, it's funny that way. And it's one of the things that makes sports interesting, but it's also in some ways kind of sobering. What are we doing?
What are we doing? So you mentioned Georgia in passing. Georgia plays Alabama for the SEC championship, and Georgia would appear to have the better team this year. I mean, is that how you see it unfolding, that this is Georgia's year?
Yeah, I do. And when I look at those two teams in particular, mm-hmm. the matchup between Alabama's offensive line and Georgia's defensive line is a huge mismatch.
Which is unusual.
Georgia's favor, which is very unusual.
Because Alabama is always cranking up pros.
Now, they have the quarterback and they have the wideouts.
Yeah.
Which, that's what Alabama has had the last four or five years.
Oh, my God. Have they ever?
The quarterbacks and the wideouts. So, our old pal Bill O'Brien, if he can figure out a way to get that quarterback enough time to, you know, get the ball out... it wouldn't stun me.
Do we get to talk to him after the game so he can say, I respect the question, which, as we've ascertained, means I hate the question, I wish you'd die.
I can't think of who it is now. Somebody else plays that card all the time now. Some big-time coach. I respect the question.
No, you don't. You really don't.
Franklin says, I appreciate the question. I get it. Those are his two big.
I hate when he says I get it, because get then it. That's sort of like a placeholder for I'm not going to answer it, but I get it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't like that.
That's usually what it is. I get it, but I'm not really going to go there. And the other one is, I'd really like to talk about Rutgers.
No, we don't. You don't get that choice.
In fact, he did that when I did the thing about, are you going to be the coach next year? He said, I really want to. I get it. But I really want to talk about whoever they were playing. Well, Michigan State, yeah.
Well, there you go. Which, I guess this is the last thing I wanted to touch on. Again, Michigan State turned out to be a really weird game with the snow and the reports of flu racking the Michigan State team. And it turned out that that wasn't a factor, and Michigan State played a great game and beat Penn State. I mean, why... And the other year they had a 3-hour lightning delay in the middle of the game. So why is there weird?
That was delightful. I was at that.
Oh, I'm sure there was. Yes, yeah. What is it about this series that invites weirdness?
Weirdness.
Is it the land grant trophy?
Look at the land grant trophy.
Is there some aura emanating from the ugliest trophy in college football?
I got to give Franklin credit for the line he had on that, which is it looks like it was something that your uncle built in the garage with spare parts.
I said it looked like a sixth grader's art project that they hurriedly put together the night before it was due.
Except the funny thing about it is it's gigantic and it's incredibly heavy. You know, there's video of over various times over the years when the team that won the game and two big linemen come over to pick it up and they're like, holy shit, this is a boulder we're trying to haul around.
It's so weird. It's ugly and it's heavy.
It's ugly and heavy and bulky. And,
So that must be what it is. The Land Grant Trophy has put a curse on the game.
It's a weird thing. Part of it is that it's always at the end of the year, so the weather's often bad.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of times when I've been out there when the weather was bad.
Right.
In fact, that the Lightning game, the weather was not that bad that day, but they had a policy. Michigan State had a policy. If Lightning is within 25 miles, whatever the figure was, we're gonna call. And they had, it was funny because, you know, our boy Dave, he sees himself as a meteorological
yes,
expert.
He does.
And they actually had a press conference where the AD and some operations guy came into the, like the area of the press box back where the tables are, where you get, they stood out there, and Dave is, you know, you guys don't know what you're talking about.
I wish I'd been there to see that.
And then he asked Franklin a sort of meteorologically related question after the game. And Franklin was like, what? What are you asking me? What? You want me to bitch about the weather, or you want me to bitch about the weather?
Dave does like his weather.
Yeah, like the weather is analogous to the officiating. Again, you know? But anyway, the funny thing, a funny thing about this game Saturday was, you know, I didn't go, right. So I covered it by television and by virtually and all that. But there were times when you really almost couldn't see the Penn State players.
I know, they were kind of camouflaged. It was kind of crazy. Yeah, I noticed that too.
There was a couple times when Dotson was out wide, and he's got that single-digit number, and you really could. It was hard to see.
I kept on wondering if, like, what if they take a player and just kind of, like, bury him somewhere? Like on a kickoff, bury him in the end zone.
Not a bad idea. Very sort of sounds like a Family Guy episode or something.
But it was crazy. You really couldn't you couldn't see the players very well, the Penn State players, because of the jersey thing. But, yes, another weird turn in Penn State, Michigan State history.
And what a history it is. Yeah, and I mean they've had some they've had some bad losses to Michigan State over the years. Was it in 18, I think, or 9, when they hit that Michigan team was not very good at all. Michigan State team was not very good at all, and they hit it was at Penn State. And they hit a long, like almost like a Hail Mary-ish pass near the end, and Penn State had kind of controlled the game, but they had a small lead. And D'Antonio was jumping around like a nut. Eh? I mean, it was the most effusive I've ever seen him.
Right.
And then of course that game with the weather delay, that was a terrible loss too. And
and they had the one where I think it was 2 years in a row. 1 year. Michigan State was beating Penn State badly, and they decided to run a play where their center ran the ball.
Oh, yeah.
And right. I think the next year, I think Franklin did the same thing at him.
Yeah, that was a get even. Okay, here we go.
And the thing about it was D'Antoni's quote was something like, well, I kind of expected that, and, you know, I'm okay with it.
He was cool. That's right. That's a good memory, big guy. Now that you mention it, I remember that too. Yeah, he was pretty cool with it, and you know, and Mel Tucker was the Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Deservedly so.
I think deservedly so, too. I picked them to finish last in the Big Ten East, and I'm not the only person who did.
What did they have? Something like some astronomical number of transfers. Like yeah, 40? 40? Is that the number?
Some crazy number like that. He must have really worked the portal. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this running back was a transfer from Wake Forest. And he might be a Heisman finalist. He's a 1,500-yard runner. And their best receiver is a transfer from, I think, Western Michigan or Central Michigan. One of the directional Michigans.
Was that the guy who made the catch on the 4th and 15 play?
His name's Payne. I can't remember. P-A-Y-N-E is his last name.
I can't remember if he was the guy. But at any rate, that's kind of goes into that category that I mentioned earlier, as well as the defense has played all season. That just can't happen.
That was, in these last couple games, the secondary, as good as they have been all year, mm-hmm. and they have been terrific. I think they've been as good as any Penn secondary since I've been covering them. Mm-hmm. But they have failed to make some plays. That the play that decided the Michigan game
mm-hmm.
was kind of a pick play, and two D-backs crash into each other at a tight end.
The guy's
goes
running
40
forever.
Yards yeah. for a touchdown. And then this 4th and 15.
That just can't happen.
Yeah.
That can't happen.
Yeah, that was bad. That was really bad. And again, their defense was great most of the year, but I think it's fair to say they didn't come through in some key moments. Mm-hmm. They were so close to being 10-2.
Right.
They really were. I mean, right.
They lost five games by 21 points.
Yeah.
That's, you know, 7-5 doesn't look all that great, but you know.
And really the only one that I'm pretty sure they lost to a better team was Ohio State.
Yeah. And even that, they were competitive.
Yeah, they were competitive. That game was by no means a blowout. That was a competitive game. But
so yeah, it's again, it's it gets back to what you said before. The ball bounces a little strangely. So, at any rate, I think we've reached our limit. It was an all college football kind of deal.
That's right. We're both going to take a shower. Not together, certainly, but we're both going to take a shower.
But we didn't get to talk about Steph Curry going 4-for-21 against former Sixers great Michael Bridges, but
noteworthy. And you know, honestly, I watched a little bit of that. I saw a little bit of that game, and then I saw the highlights, and Steph missed some shots there.
He did.
I mean, he had a pretty clean look at a three from the top of the key, and it was an air ball to the side. Like, he missed it wide left. He probably hadn't done that since he was 9 years old.
Now, I want to see those two teams in the Western Finals, to be honest with you. I think that would be a hell of a series because I think they're both really good.
Yeah.
You know, we know the Warriors still have, you know, Klay Thompson and James Wiseman to come back, so I suspect that they're going to look quite a bit different. And the footnote on that game was Devin Booker missed at least the second half with a hamstring pull. Yeah. And the other footnote is they play again on Friday night in San Francisco.
Right, right.
So that will be interesting because my feeling is that Curry will probably drop 40.
Yeah, I would expect him to. I mean, he's off the charts.
Yeah.
Great.
But although Michael Bridges, I think that serves notice. He is a good player.
There's a lot of good matchups in a series between those two teams.
Mm.
You know, what Paul can do defensively and what do they do with Booker? I mean, if Klay Thompson's back and he's Klay Thompson, he'll probably be playing Booker. Yeah,
for sure.
And even with the bigs inside, it'll be interesting to...
Right. Well, Ayton was a real problem for the Warriors last night.
Yeah.
Ayton was a real problem. And, you know, Draymond, he's a great defender, but Ayton is a little bit of a different animal, I think. Ayton's really developed over the last year.
He's good. I thought he cooled off a little bit at the very end of the year.
He did.
Last year.
He did. At the last two games of the finals got a little too big for him, look like.
Yeah, but that's changeable.
But them as a team, they look like they have definitely taken the next step because of that.
I think this guy's an elite coach, too.
Seems like it.
Yeah, So Phoenix, throw a little NBA here.
There he is. That's the footnote to our footnote, so...
Now I feel much better. I think I can go without the channel right now.
See that? Right. See that?
That's it, gang. It's been After the Buzzer. We've enjoyed it. We'll be back again for another stab at this thing next week. Gordy and Mike, over and out.
See you later.